know a number of you know our lovely, wonderful chef, Roy McVie. But some of you might be new to meeting him tonight. But he's going to tell us a bit about his wonderful menu.
Oh, wonderful menu. Basically...
Sorry, it's so hardcore.
So just basically trying to keep it seasonal and fresh and use products and ingredients that others can't get, basically, because we have the gardens, we have the knowledge to get things that they wouldn't know how to use.
So can you please tell us about, you said you have the garden, what does that mean?
So we have three gardens. So we have one up on the balcony, which gets hit pretty hard because it's a bit close to the restaurant. It worked pretty hard. And we have two in Boston. One of them we don't use very much. And the other one we use a lot. We're out there at least once or twice a week. So all our leaves, all our greens, we don't buy any of them. They're all grown and they're all picked. So anything that's on your plate has been in my fridge for less than a week. So most of the time it's a couple of days. Sometimes we'll come through and get your salad and I've picked it an hour earlier.
Yeah. Roy, you need to tell me about those weeds that you served with the chicken.
The chickweed?
Because I just have a feeling that I've put a whole lot of those in the green bin. So if you give me a photo, I will dig them out and you are welcome to them.
We've got some more downstairs, but basically wherever there's grass at the moment, there's chickweed.
Yeah, are they like fanned out things like that?
Yeah, they fan out. They get quite high when they get big. They get a little white flower on them. And they've got a tiny green leaf.
Yep, they're the ones.
Yeah, they're the ones. So basically they taste a bit like corn husk.
Mm-hmm.
And they're lovely. And I got informed last week they're called chickweed because the chickens cook for them.
Roy, not everyone knows your story at the table. Can you tell us your background, or tell everyone your background of where it started and the people who have influenced you and how this all came to be?
This came to be because I ran out of good places to work.
That's a lie, that I'm so quoted on that line.
This is true. Like, I ran out of good places to work, and we got to the stage where I was a senior, and they're like, okay, we don't have a senior position because we don't hire seniors. Or, you know, you can come and flip burgers. And it was not what we wanted to be or what we wanted to do at all. So this came about, and I'd love to say it got put together quickly, but I'd always wanted to do it, and I'd been planning it for a really, really long time. What influences me? Nature? Life? Mm-hmm. So sort of just...
I remember when I first met you the night this place opened, and you wouldn't let me call you French-influenced, modern Australian, or any term like that. It's like, I just want to cook good food, is what you said.
I don't want to put a label on it, no?
Yeah.
Because it's not influenced by Australia.
Mel has a question.
Where were you born?
I was born in Western Australia, in Carnarvon.
Oh, where are you?
Okay. So I'm a traveller. I've been around Australia four times.
Have you?
And I've been overseas as well. I went right through Asia and across to Europe.
So this actually, we don't actually talk about this very often. I think we didn't talk about this last week or previously, but there is actually Asian influence on your... Because I know
those
private messages that we do on Facebook occasionally, often. There's Asian influence.
I know the Amuse Bouche is influenced by your time in Asia, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I spent a lot of time in Asia.
Countries?
I got my trade papers in Thailand, so I've got my trade papers in Australia and Thailand.
Wow, that's very interesting.
I studied in Vietnam and Malaysia.
Okay.
I worked in a one Michelin star restaurant in Hong Kong.
And that's why you've got such good understanding of spice.
I always have a thing for spice. I started trying to learn about it a long time before I went overseas. Mm. And it's just important to make the spices rather than to buy them in, because they tend to be really...
Unless they're mine.
There's a lot of love in there.
What did you say? Unless they're mine. And then you may buy them.
But the ones you buy at the shop are really stale. Spices have a really limited shelf life.
Yeah.
Once they're ground, and you know, buy something that's stale before it even gets to the country is not so cool.
Mm.
See, when you're saying like they're only a week old, just in your perspective, I understand that things can be 18 months old sometimes, or something that have been irradiated, or things like that in supermarkets, the general consumer. A week is spices, like greens and things.
Yeah, so they can take a really long time to get to your plate. Literally, they've got to be picked, and there's a law that says that they have to go through a specific trade route. So sometimes they're picked in North Queensland. I used to live in North Queensland, so stuff would get picked there. Would have to go through a major market, so Brisbane or Sydney or Adelaide, and then it would go back. So it could take 2 or 3 weeks, and you're getting local produce.
Rebecca was touching on something earlier about how important it is for you to cook your own food. What does that mean to you?
It's really important.
And what does your own food mean?
A lot of places wouldn't let me do it because it's a pretty scary menu sometimes.
Uh-huh.
It all tastes fantastic, but...
Most controversial menu ingredient?
I don't know.
Come on, you've gone. You've got a few.
There's actually a lot, and combination-wise.
Yeah, you
probably
just can't think.
Well, I think a big old jellyfish.
Intentionally to set out to do anything controversial at all. I don't think about flavour, and then controversy is what happens when I bring it up to the customer.
So, Roy, can I ask you, you say you're inspired by your gardens. So would you say, think peas are in season and I want to feature peas on the plate? Therefore, what is complementary to that, and where does the protein come into that? Because protein is such an important part of the meal,
it's a really
good question
because it's not
protein inside.
No, I know.
So basically, the peas came about because at the garden, there's excessive amounts of beautiful new shoots and an excessive amount of flowers.
I hate you. I got five. Five peas.
It's not really about the bacon at all. Bacon's just there for that little bit extra.
Yeah.
So it's more of a gut.
So that's what I'm interested in knowing is, are you really only putting protein on the plate because that's what the diner expects? Would you be happy just to put the pea?
I'd be quite happy just to do it as much as the dish.
Yeah.
The bacon's not there because it's what the diner expects. It's because it's just
you want to actually take the protein, take it back a bit, don't you?
I want to take it back a lot. I want to sort of use it.
So you're trying to balance kind of
so you at the moment diner because it's still very much a la carte. But when we go more towards deck, which is what we're trying to do, the protein's going to be a garnish. And so we've got several dishes we've done before, and they've all been really successful.
Yeah.
But wasn't that the bacon on the pea, wasn't that designed to balance?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's there for flavour.
So what would you, if you took that off, what would you...
Replace it with?
Replace
if it wasn't
with
bacon?
Yeah.
Could
be
vegetarian.
Does it really
just
go with
parmesan?
Could
be one
sort
of thing.
You could do
it. The salty bite? Not protein. I'd love to know the flavour as far as what is that salty bite as opposed to protein replacement.
For me, I'd be quite happy just to have the bowl full of peas.
Can I ask one more controversial question?
No, you can ask as many questions.
Somebody, I was talking to somebody yesterday and they said to me that degustation is dead. It's not the future of dining. So
why would they say that?
Well, they feel that it's not the way people want to dine anymore. People want to have shared plates and they don't want to have the elongated dining experience.
No, there's been a fuck. Sorry.
I'm throwing the question.
You're letting me answer.
Yeah. I think Champlain's on the way out.
Yeah, that's so interesting. But
you go to some venues and they give you Champlain and you're like, if I have 3 people, I'll get the same amount of food. If I have 4 people, I'll get the same amount of food.
Yeah.
So how can I
I'm not saying that's my opinion.
Let Roy get back to the kitchen and then we'll have a big fight.
No, I just want to qualify. I'm not saying that's my opinion. I'm saying that is something that somebody who's fairly influential in the food media, but what I want to understand is what do you think is the beauty of the degustation menu? Why do you
Thank
feel
you.
That's the best way to portray your food?
I want people to come here and dine. I don't want people to come here and sort of share, but it's not for me to dictate how they come and dine. I cannot stop.
But you feel that's the best way for people to experience your food?
I think to have small amounts, and I'm a big believer in
I actually want to extend Lucy's question then, because some of my favourite things are when I'm dining in any country to do, you know, fixed price, set menu, because the chef has decided the combinations that work together over a number of courses.
I agree,
courses.
I think it's
And I was, you know, it's like if I'm going into a menu, how do I choose which courses go together for a palate is the wrong way? Don't... So, I mean, and I really, remembering you, you've been a restaurateur, and you're such a produce... I've done my whole thing before. I would be happy to go into any restaurant for anybody, or restaurant, roadside place in France or wherever, anywhere that people can cook and say, just feed me.
Oh, I totally agree.
Because you understand the balance of... I'm not getting you wrong. I'm actually supporting what you're saying. And saying, I'd rather... So what do you feel about like being able to do a fixed menu as opposed to a la carte?
I think at the moment, majority of the customers come in and they want a chef, like they order the chef. I think it's about, because we have such a small menu, it's about giving them choices on how they want to dine. So there's no way I'm going to take that freedom away from them. But
as a chef,
very much believe
the balance and the harmony that you can provide the menu across a number of...
But not everybody wants
not
that,
everybody,
Rebecca.
Not everybody has
a lot of people just want to choose what they feel like at that moment.
Mm. Well, what I do believe in is that I like small dishes because they don't lose their wow factor.
Yeah.
Like, if you get a big dish and you have two mouthfuls, it's, wow, this is fantastic. And then by the time you get to number 10, it's just the same. And it's lost that specialness. So, I mean, that's what Deke's for.
Yeah.
For people who are really serious about dining. And, you know, they have a few mouthfuls or they have a small dish and they don't lose that wow factor.
I think it allows you guys to show your skill set too.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, very much. Because when you eat something big, by the end of it, it's just, you know...
So what's the number of courses for a tasting menu you should have then?
I think that comes down to the chef. I like 4 or 8. I think when you start looking at 13 and 15 and stuff, it's a bit much.
It's ridiculous.
So it just tends to be what they're doing at the moment. I think that's somewhat... You're going to be sitting there for 3 hours. Hopefully the chairs are comfy.
can I ask, are you a bit of, do you enjoy pastry?
I do.
Yes.
And please tell us about your history in learning about dessert cookery as being a pastry chef as opposed to all the stuff you've done.
I didn't really want to go into pastry, and at the time I was flying to Melbourne and studying with my ex-wife.
Yes.
Yeah, at Sabre, and I was sort of dragging her along just to come along for a holiday, and we were both working together. Basically, when we got back, she was cheaper, so she got the pastry chef position. I just learned all the skill set. Yeah.
But you like going home smelling like a garlic bowl? No pastry chef.
Okay, but interestingly, for a chef of insane main courses and things, and you've actually got pastry qualifications. You pay for courses and done.
Got quite a lot of pastry qualifications, and I've been taught by people that are really high school.
So before we get on to the dessert, which I think is now, you said to me last week it's going to become a signature. It was here the night it was open when I came, which was the potato chip cake. And I know Dane and AJ and everybody loves it. So, like, how did that come about?
For a pregnant pastry chef, and this was her food cravings. So we sort of put it together from there. But it's a bit of a scary dessert for me because it's the one that puts bums at seats. So I get really bored of it. It's not my favourite, and I'm just never going to be able to take it off. And
but it's so good.
Probably the dish that will become really well known for.
Are you in a position where you can go and eat out at other chefs' restaurants?
I would really like to be, but I'm not at all.
Yeah.
I think that's time-wise and financially, just because to make everybody... I'm sorry to say this, because I'm... Yes. Okay, so unlike most restaurants in Sydney, Roy and Esther are self-funded. They've done this all on their own, and they're living on the premises, and... got this amazing talented chef who is so dedicated to doing what he wants to do as far as his food goes that he's committed to living here and doing this. So that was a really lovely question as far as eating out, but it's like it's money and time, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're mostly in the kitchen by yourself. You've got an apprentice, but there's only the two of you and
there's
you're
only
mostly
two of
by yourself.
Only for a while. You're doing it for yourself for how long?
Yeah.
He's been here for 2 weeks.
Mm.
So before that it was just me.
8 months.
Yeah,
just 7 months.
Astonishing.
Yeah. And this is why I'm so passionate about Roy's food. Not only because of how beautiful it is on the plate, but I don't really know anybody else in Sydney that is giving so much of themselves.
Can you tell us how you manage that? Because that... I can't comprehend that for yourself.
I'm really organised, so most of the meat's slow cooked, so it means we can hold all of it. And we just try and keep. I know the food looks really complicated, but it's very simple. There's never more than say 2 or 3 components, and we focus more on doing it well rather than trying to put a lot of stuff on the plate. And there's a lot of stuff we don't put on the plate. We don't put unnecessary garnishes. We don't put unnecessary sauces. We only put on the plate what it needs.
It was interesting because when I first came to Australia, that was sort of was the worst thing about the food. You know, there was a lot of people trying new things, and it was
too many things.
Yeah. But there were so many flavors on one plate that you didn't know what it was really.
Yeah. So
and then I think, I mean, I know, and I'm sorry, French, so. I'm very traditional for that, but I think what you said, you need 2 or 3 flavors on the plate, because if not, you can't really assess them. You don't know what you're eating. It might be good, but there's a processor up there that can't get it.
But yeah, we do really complex dishes, but the as far as putting it on the plate, it's really simple, because it's all prepped. So everything that's complex is one component there.
And how often do you change your menu?
We change it a lot. I've been holding back for a little while because we've got a new menu starting from up here, which is in place now. So basically we work seasonally, but for me seasonally means if it's not there tomorrow, it's coming off there.
Yeah.
If I can't go and get the leaves that I want, we're changing the menu. If something's not right, it's gone.
But for me, that's what I love.
So...
With all your talents, and I'm sure you know a lot of people and who love coming to work with you, would you ever consider having some guest appearances from some chefs around the world?
Yeah, so we're trying to
I would love to come here and bring people if you had
guests. Yeah, sure. We've been throwing events. I started talking to Marty about an event. I haven't got that far yet.
Who is Marty?
Got to ring Martin Botes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so he's probably going to do a guest stint here at some stage, and we'll use the produce from our on his farm.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Do you use Tony Mann?
I don't know who Tony Mann is.
Oh, okay. Ingleside?
No, so basically I do all the suppliers. I'm the fish supplier and the vegetable supplier as well, and I go and pick all the
You fish?
We go to fish markets, yeah.
Good. Do you go to Homebush to buy your produce?
We go to Flemington now.
Yeah.
So maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks. And basically, the minute you go to Flemington, there's probably a menu change coming.
So with all the incredible focus on the food, you have an incredible wine list, which for me is really impressive because it spans a whole range of price points, and you've got a lot of really good quality, good value Australian wines on the list that a lot of places aren't doing. So how does your wine list come together?
So basically we're sort of trying to run it the same way as the food. It changes regularly. It's very much focused on good quality and value. So we don't want crazy expensive wines. We're looking for things that drink really well and that are priced well. And basically we've had a lot of help from the wine list. Rudolph here has got a fantastic palate. Thank you, Rudolph. And my palate's getting better as well. So.
Yes. And your humble as ever. I love you so much.
That was delicious. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chef.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure.
What's your advice to future young chefs?
Just do what you love. Yeah, like follow your heart and stick to your guns.
That's true for any profession.
Don't compromise.
They're very hard words, like cost you everything. And I know you've got everything on the line.
Don't do it. Just stick to your guns and just battle it out. Yeah.
That's why we love you, Roy.
have you got it in mind any guest chefs from overseas?
Not at the moment.
No, we can help.
It'd be really exciting. Do you know many foreign chefs in Sydney?
I know a lot of chefs in Sydney, but it's very much in Sydney at the moment because this has been my home for about 7 years now. So we're not going to be leaving anytime soon.
No.
And is it your wife?
Esther.
Esther, is she here?
She's downstairs.
All right. Yeah. Say hello.
It's quite an amazing story with Esther because the first night we came here, I mean, her progression to front of house has been extraordinary. Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
She really took it.
I was here at 5:30 to make sure I was here to greet everybody, and I heard Esther briefing the front of house.
Brilliant.
And she was like, no, she was amazing. It was like she was, not better. She was so knowledgeable and firm.
Yeah.
And aligned with your philosophy. I really loved it. I loved her breathing. It was fantastic.
She's had some really good people working with her, and Rudolph's been training her a lot.
Mm.
But she's got
better and better and better.
Head in leaps and bounds. She was like a little mouse, remember?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's unbelievable. We had to see it from the beginning to now to understand the progression. Yeah. Credit to her.
You better go and do.
All right, I gotta go.
All right, thank you, Chef.
Thank you. Thanks, Roy.
Simon, very much. Here's the last course. Simon's down here.